Bill 190. And as we are waiting for the list, and while we're doing that, I guess there's a couple other bills, a number of bills that are scheduled today, but I want to go through a list before I start the public hearing on 190 and give people that may be here on some of the bills that are scheduled for today that are not, and I say again, that are not going to be heard today, for the most part, is because we have not received the amendments back that were necessary to address those. So, the bills that I have that are not going to be heard today, and Council, correct me if I'm wrong, is SB 334, SB 426, SB 935, SB 944, SB 975. Is that it?
Yes.
And the other thing I want to make sure everyone understands, we had previously scheduled Senate Bill 7 to be up for a public hearing, a possible work session today. That was removed from the calendar, I believe, last night. The intent of the chair at this point is we have another bill that is on its way over from the House. It's House Bill 3305, which deals with the same issue. This is unemployment extension of coverage and the area that would include some of our military personnel. The chair is not going to take any public testimony on Senate Bill 7 at this point. We're going to wait for House Bill 3305, and we more than likely will use that as the vehicle to address the issues that would have been addressed in Senate Bill 7. But if you will stay tuned next week, we will start setting agendas, and you'll know how we're going to proceed. So at this point, if you're tracking Senate Bill 7, stay tuned, and also be on the lookout for House Bill 3305. With that, I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 190. I have Chris Davey and is it Carla Spina?
Spencer.
Spence?
Yeah.
Okay, and Carla Spence, if you'd please come up. And also, I'm going to go ask this is Julia Huddleston if you'd like to come up as well. And please, we'd love for you to do a thing on Senate Bill 190.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 190 allows the Home Care Commission to elect workers' compensation coverage on behalf of the clients of the Department of Human Services who employ home care workers that are paid by the state. We have a dash one amendment which requires the Home Care Commission to elect workers' compensation coverage for home care workers. It basically deletes the may and replaces it with a shall and deletes the remainder of the bill. We have no revenue impact, and we have not received a fiscal impact statement on this bill yet.
All right. And who would like to start off?
I would, please.
All right. If you'll identify yourself for the record, and please proceed.
Yes, I will. Chair Przanski and members of the committee, my name is Julia Huddleston. I work for the Seniors and People with Disabilities Cluster of the Department of Human Services. The Department of Human Services offers a program of long-term, of in-home care for folks with long-term care needs, and we use home care workers to provide those services. About 13,000 home care workers provide long-term care assistance to seniors and to people with physical disabilities in their own home. The client themselves, a Medicaid client, is the employer of the home care worker. They hire, they fire, they direct tasks and set hours of employment. DHS, through Medicaid, pays the bills for this. In the year 2000, as a result of Ballot Measure 99, the Home Care Commission was created to serve as an employer of record for collective bargaining purposes for home care workers and to ensure high-quality services through training and through establishment and maintenance of a registry of home care workers. The first collective bargaining process between the Home Care Commission, the State of Oregon through its Department of Administrative Services, and SEIU Local 503 was completed in 2003. One of the benefits that was extended to home care workers at the time was workers' compensation coverage. Senate Bill 190, as originally written, does two things. Since the home care workers are the individual since the home care clients are the individual employers of home care workers, in order to elect to treat their workers as subject workers, each and every one of our 13,000 Medicaid clients had to make an election. Senate Bill 190, as originally written, would simply allow the Home Care Commission to make that election on behalf of the workers. It would remove a layer of administrative complexity that really doesn't need to be there. The other thing the bill does would be to allow us to use, this is a non-traditional workforce, and given the statute, each and every client is an employer of their home care worker. So the way the current modified return to work provisions work, we can only return that person to work if they're ready to go back, if their client employer, A, needs them, and B, chooses to have them back. This is a population, as you can imagine, where there is turnover and where things happen. People get better, people's needs develop more severely. The other change to Senate Bill 190 as originally written would simply allow us to say within the geographic area, if another Medicaid client can use that home care worker's talents, if the home care worker can perform the duties they need, and if the client chooses to employ them, that'll count as a return to work situation. The department didn't see the Dash 1 amendments before we walked in this afternoon. The department would have to oppose the Dash 1 amendments, though, because the Dash 1 amendments moves the workers' compensation coverage out of the collective bargaining arena, where there is some flexibility, and into a statutory entitlement. So there would be a fiscal impact, and the department will be pricing a fiscal impact on the Dash 1s. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, what we're going to do is we'll take a testimony from all of the panel, and then we'll open up for questions. Who'd like to go next?
Do you want to go next?
Sure. Here to identify yourselves. And
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Chris Davey with Safe Corporation. We are supportive of Senate Bill 190. I'm here really just to answer any questions that you have about how this program is administered. SAFE does provide the coverage for these home health care workers, and the second part of the bill really just puts these workers on the same footing as any other worker in the insurance workplace. It's just a peculiarity of this particular group of workers that the employer is considered to be the client rather than DHS as the agency. I also wanted to point out that there is a technical problem with the bill that will need an amendment, and I discussed this with Charlie Cheek of Legislative Council this morning. On page 3 of the bill, the bold language begins, notwithstanding paragraph C of this subsection, and the intent was not to make this apply to the entire part of paragraph C, but only to a portion of paragraph C. And so Charlie recommended that there be a change that would specifically identify the parts of sub C that the new sub E would supersede. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right. And we'll go ahead and take your testimony.
Okay. Chairman Pozanski and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Carla Spence, and I'm the home care director for SEIU Local 503. And I am here also in favor of Senate Bill 190 and would like to, for the record, make a clarification in terms of the Dash 1s. We would like to see an amendment to the bill that would require workers' comp coverage to home care workers, the may into a shall on the first page. But I'd like to tell you why we would like to do that, why we would like to see that amendment. We have no problem with the rest of the bill in terms of the unique nature of the return to work issues with this population. As Julia Huddleston just testified, it's not always possible for an injured worker to return to work for a particular client. That client may no longer need a home care worker. So the reason why we would like to see the may turn into a shall for this group of workers is a couple of things. One, most American workers take workers' compensation for granted. Home care workers have really had to fight for this coverage. For the past 20-some-odd years, home care workers have provided a really incredible service to our seniors and people with disabilities, while at the same time saving our state a great deal of money. But on-the-job injuries have been suffered in silence, and there's been no health care coverage, and there's been no training per se. The building block for home care workers' health insurance coverage is workers' compensation. We cannot have health insurance coverage without having workers' compensation. Every health insurance company in the state has said that they would not be interested in issuing health care coverage to this workforce without the workers' comp coverage. We extended workers' comp coverage in April of 2003. This month we'll celebrate our first year of health care coverage. And we knew going into bargaining last time that workers' compensation would become the centerpiece issue for us, and it really did. SAFE had concerns about insuring this population for reasons that were clearly understood. This is a predominantly older women workforce, low-wage workers working in very independent work environments and without a lot of regular, what we would typically call a supervisory oversight for health and safety issues. But working together with SAFE and Governor Kulongowski and others, we were able to put together an insurance plan. We also were very conservative in terms of pricing the workers' comp coverage with several escape clauses in our collective bargaining agreement in the event that the workers' comp cost went above a certain amount. It was $3,068,585, I think. But right now, we are bargaining our second contract, and the state has put a proposal on the table that would end workers' compensation coverage and health care coverage on December 31st, 05. And that's very problematic and troublesome to us to take a group of employees that have, after 25-plus years, finally enjoy a level of benefits that most other American workers enjoy, and then to be faced with the possibility of losing those services, losing those benefits. We need to give this workforce the same basic on-the-job protections that most every other American worker enjoys. We need to invest in this workforce. We need to be able to provide health care coverage to this workforce. We know with the aging of the baby boomers that this is going to be a workforce that's going to become incredibly important in Oregon and across the country. We know that there have been studies done both nationally and regionally that shows that health care coverage and workers' compensation coverage actually lends itself to better recruitment and retention of qualified home care workers. And we believe that we need to invest in this workforce. We need to provide them with the same level of benefits. It should not be something that is given and taken away at the bargaining table. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Committee members, are there any questions for any of the three? Start off Senator Beyer and then back to Senator Wissett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said that the cost of $3 million, is that an annual figure? Is it about 2 years ago you said you got workers' comp coverage for a cost of $3 million?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, the $3 million was from April of 2003 through June 30th, 2005. 18 months.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, if I may, the $3 million figure was a marker figure that was written in that's only state general fund. This right. Population's Medicaid matchable by and large. So, meaning that we also had federal fund dollars go into the workers' compensation program. I believe the expenditures, because we're still projecting through the end of the biennium, but the expected expenditures for the 15-month period were somewhere right around $6.1 million total funds.
Thank you.
Any other questions, Senator Beyer? Senator Wissett?
Thank you, Chair. Przanski, for whomever wishes to answer, approximately how many home health care workers are employed in Oregon on average?
Chair Przanski, Senator Wittsit, about 13,000.
Okay. And to follow up, do these the home health care workers receive pension, you know, retirement benefits?
Mr. Chair, Senator, no, they don't.
Okay. And could follow up, what percentage, if any, are currently receiving medical insurance premiums?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the last number that I saw was about 4,000 people were enrolled in the health insurance that's currently offered through the Home Care Commission.
So there would be, in order to get, as I understand it, in order for to workman's compensation to be available to all workers, you would have to insure another 9,000 people?
Oh, Mr. Chair, Senator, we currently do for workers' compensation insure the entire workforce. The health insurance has eligibility parameters around it on numbers of hours worked. And of the people who have qualified on the numbers of hours worked, 4,000 people approximately have elected to use the health insurance benefit.
But it is on an hourly, if they meet the hourly threshold, it's available to anyone then?
Mr. Chair, Senator, yes it is.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Mr. Davey, I do have one question for you. Your testimony talked about needing an additional amendment. I understand that you've talked to legislative council. Was council able to give you any perspective as to when we might see those amendments or that amendment come forward?
Mr. Chair, I did not ask for that amendment. I just consulted with him to see whether he agreed that there was an issue here. We did talk about how that amendment could be written, but I think that the intent was to wait and see what happened here today and decide whether to go forward with drafting that amendment.
All right. We will be looking to draft that amendment, and I guess the question is up to council. Did you have an opportunity to get the information from Mr. Davies' testimony as to what those...
No, I actually was walking around.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to meet with council afterwards.
That would be my preference, and I appreciate your time on doing that. If there are any other questions for this panel, thank you very much. And is there anyone else that's here today that wanted to give public testimony on Senate Bill 190? If not, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 190, and we will have this bill, I assume, back before us maybe this next. Well, I don't know if it'll be next week. More than likely, it will be the week after next, if it is able. When it comes back, based on the committee. Just for everyone that's here, this committee will be on the road a week from today, so we will not be meeting here in Salem, but instead we'll be in Eugene doing our last of our road hearings for the committee. I want to take a moment and just go back through the announcement I made at the very beginning, since I know some additional people have come into the room, just to make sure people are not waiting here for something that's not going to occur today. So again, the following bills are not going to be heard today in committee. We've already taken Senate Bill 7 off the agenda as of last night, but as I mentioned, we will be looking at that in conjunction with House Bill 3305 once it gets over from the House. The bills that were still on the schedule for today that are not going to be heard today are Senate Bill 334, Senate Bill 426, Senate Bill 935, Senate Bill 944, and Senate Bill 975. As I mentioned to you, these are bills that are what to say, works in progress. We're waiting for amendments on each and every one of those if they're going to be moving forward. And so at this point, they are off today's docket. And so if you're here, feel free to leave and just watch the scheduling that will be occurring more than likely the week after next. All right. With that, what we're going to do is we're going to start moving in our work sessions, and we're going to start moving some of the bills out that are ready to go. I'm going to start off with a work session on Senate Bill 433. And Ms. Braun, do you want to go ahead and give us a...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 433 clarifies that for hire, trust owner operators are non-subject workers for workers' compensation purposes. We heard this bill back on February 14th, and it has the support of the Management Labor Advisory Committee. It does have a -1 amendment, which adds reference to ORS 825.104. This amendment makes sure the bill covers interstate commerce trucks as well as intrastate commerce trucks. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
All right. And this is one that we had on the agenda early on, and we're waiting for a couple of things to occur. I think everything's happened. We do have the -1s. And so, Senator Beyer, if you feel so comfortable.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the -1 amendment in Senate Bill 433.
Senator Byer moves dash one amendments into Senate Bill 433. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, I would move Senate Bill 433 as amended by the committee to forward with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Byer moves Senate Bill 433 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. I'm going to carry this one. And we will close the session on Senate Bill 433. The next one I'm going to open up will be work session on Senate Bill 355.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 355 allows tax-exempt charitable organizations to conduct bingo, lotto, or a Monte Carlo event operations in more than one county. It declares an emergency. It has a dash three amendment that we're considering today, and I dropped the dash three amendments off of your offices today. I hope that you received them. What the amendments do, if an organization, it allows bingo operations in more than one county if an organization does not have bingo operations in more than three counties and meets at a location where the organization generally conducts charitable program activities and the handle does not exceed $250,000. It also exempts devices used to conduct bingo from the definition of gray machine and ORS 167.117. These amendments we worked with the Oregon Department of Justice on, and I believe Ross Layburn is here to answer any questions, if you had any questions. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
All right. So we need the dash threes moved, and let me first ask if everyone's comfortable enough to go ahead and work the bill. And if we are, Senator Byer, if you'd like to make a motion on the dash threes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move the dash three amendments in the Senate Bill 355.
Senator Byer moves the dash three amendments in the Senate Bill 355. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move Senate Bill 355 as amended by the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Byer moves Senate Bill 355 as amended with the dash three amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, go ahead.
I was just going to clarify that it wasn't said, but we had testimony from some of the senior groups of the committee that they were in support of the bill to use this bingo funding, and that was the purpose of it. I assume that they were also worked with on these amendments.
If I remember correctly, I think Senator Nelson had actually told us that there was some additional work that needed to be done. I think it was done at his direction.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Yes. Well, we've all been working.
Right. But, I mean, he's aware of it more importantly. Senator Ringo.
Mr. Chair, I've expressed concern in past sessions about bingo to the extent that it becomes wagering and gambling, and it raises issues, and they sound kind of silly when you think of seniors in a charitable context, but I think it can blend into something that's a little bit different. And I'm willing to vote yes, but I just wanted to express those concerns.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing with us today. Any other discussion? And any objections? Not hearing any. Senate Bill 355, as amended, will be going to the floor, as we'll sign Senator Nelson to carry this one. And let's see, I am looking at before we open up a work session, we have Senate Bill 194. This is one that has come before us from Boley. It requests that a study be conducted regarding discrimination of injured workers. The intent of the chair is to move the dash one amendments. Once they are moved, then move the bill to Ways and Means without a recommendation. So Ways and Means can have it in front of them to discuss and decide what, if anything, should happen. And I'm wondering if anyone wants me to hold off on moving this one till later in the agenda. If not, I'd like to go ahead and take care of that now.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to add, and I'm trying to rapidly read the dash one amendment to see what they do to the bill. If you could have on it, explain them, it'd be
She gets paid the big bucks to do that, so why don't we have her do that?
First, I need to apologize for my written note on the 194-1 amendments. For some reason, I wasn't thinking last night. But I thought there were 31 pages because I got stuck with something else. But there isn't really 31 pages. There's two pages for the amendments. I did write down what the amendments did in the staff report. So the amendment replaces the original bill in its entirety. It directs the Bureau of Labor and Industries to study how and whether injured workers experience unlawful discrimination after experiencing work-related injuries. Allows Foley to research the issue, enter into an interagency agreement with Department of Consumer and Business Services, including the sharing of information. The study is required to be completed January 1st, 2009, and contains a sunset provision of January 2nd, 2010. This does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. It has no revenue impact. We heard it on March 31st.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do know, I recognize now this is the same amendment we had at the first hearing.
Yep.
And
are you comfortable to go ahead and make motions on this, or do we want to have someone else?
Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate someone else. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and open a work session on Senate Bill 194. And Senator Burdick, we're wanting to move the dash one amendments, and then what we're going to do, the intent of the chair is to then move the bill to Ways and Means without any recommendations.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 194.
Senator Burdick moves the dash one amendments in the Senate Bill 194. Is there any discussion? Senator DeBeyer.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm not going to object to this motion on the amendment, but anyway, I expressed at the first hearing if we need a study, which I don't know that yet what we need to study, but if we need a study, is Bowie the proper place to conduct the study? And that's my concern about this. I mean, I think two questions need to be answered, neither of which have yet been answered. To my satisfaction, I'm not going to object to this amendment because this amendment is better than the original bill. Yet, I don't think it raises the level of need yet.
Okay, and so what? My understanding, I guess, one of the avenues, if this moves forward with no recommendation, two Ways and Means, then I would think that would be an appropriate place for us as individual members to raise maybe some of the concerns as to, one, is the study necessary? Two, if the study is a good practice, then whether it should be in-house or should it be contracted through them to someone else. So with that, Senator Wissett, do you have any questions?
It seems like some of that is actually policy rather than fiscal, perhaps.
Well, I mean, it could be done in policy, but I think it also can be done at the Ways and Means, because one of the things we'd be looking at, or what the Ways and Means would be looking at, is, number one, since it's going down without recommendation, they will have an opportunity to determine whether or not it's something that would be recommended to be done, and whether we have the money, and if we do have the money, what is the best way to use that money. And so I would think that it would be, since we have not had the opportunity to have any type of fiscal or cost analysis as to what it might cost the agency to perform this task, or to have someone outside, that would be something that would be back to Ways and Means in the first place. And so since they're going to be crunching numbers, I feel comfortable at least getting it down there. That's why I think without any recommendation to allow them to make that determination. Any other discussion? Then any objections to Senate Bill 194-1's being adopted? I'll say it the other way. Should the dash ones be adopted in Senate Bill 194 members? No objection. So moved.
Senator Pazansky?
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 194 as amended without recommendation to the Ways and Means Committee by prior reference.
And does that bring any more discussion?
I think you've already said it, Mr. Chair. I would agree with Senator Whitson. I think the main policy discussion, I believe there is still a policy discussion, is there a study needed? Because if, when you send the bill to Ways and Means, in my opinion, even if you don't get that recommendation to it in passing, you're still sending the bill down there that says the Bureau of Labor and Industry shall study. So to me, that implies that this committee has decided that there should be a study. It just hasn't decided how it's going to be funded. So I don't think that level of question has yet been answered. The second question then is how it gets studied. I would agree that's probably a mixed decision between policy and
and budget, but to me, the issue just hasn't raised to that first level yet.
All right, I appreciate that. And Senator Wissett as well. So, Karen, if you'd be so kind, at this point, we'll go ahead and call the roll for the adoption of Senate Bill 194 as amended, with the motion of it going to Ways and Means by prior reference without any recommendation.
No.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Byer?
No.
Chair Posnanski?
Aye. With the constitutional majority received, Senate Bill 194 will move to the Ways and Means Committee without recommendation by prior reference. At this point, we'll go ahead and start with the top of the work session group, with opening up a work session on Senate Bill 139. And Council, if you'll go ahead and give us a little.
Be glad. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 139 makes discrimination against employee for filing a wage claim, reporting violations of working minimum wage and overtime laws, and unlawful employment practice. Clarifies compensatory damages are available remedy. We heard this on February 8th. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact and no amendment.
Senator Byer, I'm sorry, I didn't see. Okay. Senator Burdick, I thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 139 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick moves Senate Bill 139 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, when we first heard this bill a long time ago now, 2 months ago, it seems like.
It has been a while.
at that time, we talked about the concern about duplicate penalties, and we have a matrix here that I think there are potentially duplicate penalties for the same thing, and that has not been clarified in the bill by any amendments, so I can't support it at this point in time.
All right. Any other discussion? Any? Okay, I appreciate that. If there's not any discussion and there's going to be some objection, Karen, if you'd be so kind to call the roll.
No.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Byer?
No.
Chair Posnanski?
Aye. Senate Bill 139, receiving the constitutional majority, will move to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Now we'll open up a...
We need a carrier.
Carrier for that one. Senator Ringo, would you like to carry that one?
I would love to.
All right. Senator Ringo will be carrying 139. And I will open a work session with Senate Bill 141. And, Council, if you'll go ahead and tell us a little bit about 141.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. 141 authorizes debit card and payment of wages if employer and employee both agree. We have the -2 amendments, and the -2 amendments delete all references to debit cards and refers instead to electronic payment devices. Allows employers and employees to agree that employee will receive wages through electronic payment device if the employee can use the device in the county where issued. There are sufficient amount of funds on the device. Nothing prohibits a fee on the employer for issuing a device or limiting the number of free transactions as long as the employee can get full wages without a fee. An employee can revoke the agreement after a 30-day written notice to employer. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on this one. And there may be an outstanding issue about the definition of an electronic payment device, but I think that's maybe being resolved elsewhere.
Yeah, and I want to just go ahead and put on the record, Mr. Martinez, Tim Martinez, and I spoke, I believe it was yesterday. He told me that he still had some issues with the bill as to some clarification on the definitions. He agreed that it would be appropriate or okay with, from his perspective, to allow the bill to move forward, understanding that they that he would continue to work with Boley on the issue and that they would address it on the House side. And I will confirm with him, and if that seems to not be the case, I will be more than willing to have this come back into committee. But at this point, I believe what he told me was that he was comfortable with it moving forward because he knew that we had time deadlines and he did not want to stop the bill from moving forward at this point. And so with that said, I'm going to probably look to...
Mr. Chair, yeah, I'd move that to amendment.
Senator Beyer moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 141. Is there any discussion?
Simply, the bankers in the building today, none of them talked to me about pro or con. But as a practical thing, by looking at the restrictions on this, I don't see how it will ever get used.
Yeah. It's one of those things that I guess it's not really for me to decide on when or how it's going to be used. That's between Boley and the other people who might be using the debt card. That this is something that they felt was appropriate for this day and time. And I know that Mr. Martinez, as you said, is out of the building today, or at least this afternoon, and that he was willing to continue to work and try to negotiate a resolution on that. So, with that, is there any other discussion?
Just a question, just to clarify, this is a voluntary situation where the employee voluntarily accepts electronic payment, right?
Senator Wissett, I'm watching the nodding heads out front that are going up and down. I take that as a yes.
Also, to clarify, it's also voluntary by the employer.
Right.
And there's no mandate. Just because the employee wants it, the employer doesn't have to do it.
No, it's a all voluntary process.
Yeah. My concern there is not only from the standpoint of a mandate, but also some of these workers may not have transportation where they can actually get to a place where they can use those electronic cards.
No, absolutely. No, I think it's a good put on the record that we need to make certain that this is, in fact, voluntary for both sides, so it can actually be efficiently used, and the parties who have voluntarily agreed that this was something that they can would accommodate their needs. Each of them. So any other discussion or comments that we want to put on the record? If not, is there any objection to Senate Bill 1? I think we're just doing the dash 2s right now.
Yeah.
The dash 2s being adopted in Senate Bill 141. Not so moved.
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 141 as amended by the committee to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Beyer moves Senate Bill 141 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And do we have a carrier for this one? All right. Senator Burdick will be the carrier on 141. And I'm going to go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 141. And I'm looking at what we have here. And I guess what I want to do is look at, Senate Bill 142 before I open a work session on that. This one appears to have two amendments that would need to be adopted. And that at that point, we would be moving it to the floor. I understand that this has a minimal fiscal that does not require it to go to Ways and Means. And I'm wondering if I can get a read from the committee if there's any objection looking at our numbers at the end.
Mr. Chair, I support the ones, but I don't like the twos.
Okay. And let me just...
The twos put it back to... Put the...
Defined
back to Boley, and that's acceptable.
Just to clarify, the dash twos just take the fines and use them to recover the cost of enforcing the bill. It goes back to Boley, but just to recover the cost.
Does that make any difference? Probably not.
All
right, so we're going to hold off on that one.
Gone?
And no, he's not.
Going
down, I've got 573, and this is 573. I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 573. Council, if you'll go ahead and give us the update and the on the bill and the dash twos.
All right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 573 provides restrictions on re-rating an existing insurance policy when there is a change of family status or makes a policy change that requires an issuance of a new policy. We have dash two amendments, which delete the requirement of a specific explanation by the insurance company when the credit history is used to make an adverse underwriting decision, and changes the language to refer to specific changes in marital status and in ownership of motor vehicles and the consumer's home. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. We heard this one on March 29th.
So we're dealing with Senate Bill 573, and we're looking at the dash twos. Senator Beyer?
Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that everyone's in agreement on these dash two amendments, and I can get a head nod out from the audience.
There's three.
Okay.
We got lots of them. That's positive.
I move the dash two amendments in the Senate Bill 573.
Senator Beyer moves the dash twos in the Senate Bill 573. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So moved.
Senate Bill 573 is amended by the committee to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer moves Senate Bill 573 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And do we have a volunteer to carry 573?
I'll carry it.
Yeah. Senator Ringo, our star carrier today.
I'm catching up for past delinquencies.
Yes, you knew the day of reckoning would be here, and guess what? Here it is. So I'm going to go back up to Senate Bill 142 and open a work session on Senate Bill 142. And
I'm going to be dead long.
Can I do that? Can I do my thing?
We'll let you do your thing. So, okay.
Karen will get mad at me.
We shall be mad at me, so we don't ever mad at either of us.
Senate Bill 142 makes failure to pay in support enforcement division money held pursuant to a support enforcement order and unlawful deduction. We have a dash one amendment which deletes the requirement that employer pay the employee in trust for the holder of the support rights. And we have a dash two amendment that requires the money recovered to be used to reimburse the cost of enforcing this bill. We would like both those amendments to be passed, and we heard this on March 1st. We have no revenue impact. We do have a minimal fiscal impact.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Burdick.
I move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 142.
Senator Burdick moves the dash one amendments into Senate Bill 142. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair?
Yes.
I move the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 142.
Senator Burdick moves the dash two amendments into Senate Bill 142. Any discussion? Basically, what's already been said?
That's me.
Okay. And Senator Wissett also agrees. And so let's go ahead and call the roll on the dash two amendments, please.
No.
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
No.
Aye. Receiving a constitutional
One more.
Oh, I'm not supposed to. Okay. I tried my way.
We just adopted the amendments.
Okay. Mr. Chair?
Let me first clear this one, and then we'll go to the next. Okay. The dash two are adopted.
Very good, Mr.
Correct.
Chair.
How's that?
Mr. Chair, I have something else to say.
Please.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 142 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick moves Senate Bill 142 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any more discussion?
Yeah.
Please. Senator Beyer.
Mr. Chair, the bill now, as it now looks, puts me in a tough dilemma because I think there is an issue. The issue needs to be addressed. The bill with the dash one amendments, I think, was the good fix, was the fix that we needed, and that I want to support. I don't think we want to get into the habit of having agencies going out issuing penalties to fund themselves. I think that's bad public policy, and it just leads to the incentive for them to go out and find more people to find so they can do more work. I'm going to have to vote against the bill now, even though I didn't want to have to vote against the bill.
Okay. Any other discussion? Chairman, if you'll go ahead and call the roll on the vote for Senate Bill 142.
No.
Senator Ringo?
Aye.
Senator Burdick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
No.
Aye. Senate Bill 142 receiving, I'm not going to say constitutional, required number of votes. It will move to the to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. And we'll close that work session, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 635.
Oh, we need to carry on that last bill, sorry.
Okay, on
142.
On 142, I'll carry that one. And I think we've opened up the work session on 635.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 635 requires workers' compensation coverage for adult foster home caregivers. There's a dash one amendment. So the dash one amendment sets the effective date July 2007, requires a Department of Human Services to study the issue and consider the information when preparing their 2007-2009 budget. You received an amendment today at your office, and there's no fiscal impact. There is a fiscal statement issued. It's on the next page. Basically, the impact is unknown at this point, but there will be a fiscal impact.
All right.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
And I guess I'd like to ask the council, is the fiscal impact unknown because it's delaying the implementation of this into the next biennium, or is it because they don't really know what it's going to cost?
This fiscal impact came before the dash one amendment, because the dash one amendment came today. So the fiscal impact is unknown with the dash one amendment as well.
I guess the follow up question, Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. I don't know if the council is right for an answer, just somebody from the audience would be, but if the Department of Human Services studies the issue and considers and figures out that it's a bad idea and they don't put it in their budget for the 2007-2009 session, or what happens?
Well, my understanding is that the bill does not take effect until July 1 of 2007. And so I would assume the agency would be able to come back to the next legislature and explain the situation and their reasoning. And then the legislature could, in fact, decide to adopt, amend, or do nothing based on that information that they receive. And that's one of the reasons I think that it was set out until the next the beginning of the next biennium. Other questions? This one we have not actually opened up for work session yet, so.
I know it's kind of putting the cart in front of the horse to pass it and then study it. It seems like maybe you should study it and then have them come back and report, and if they think it's a good idea, then you pass it.
Just for the record, I want to clarify that it's Department of Consumer and Business Services that would do the study, and it's DHS that would put that in their budget. They're considered to put it in their budget, so there's two different agencies working here. No. Not the best. For the record.
Any other questions?
So would this then be referred to Ways and Means?
At this point, it would not be referred to Ways and Means, because the effective date is not during the next biennium, but would be the following biennium before it would go into effect.
Mr. Chair?
Welcome to Salem.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I support the concept of providing workers with workers' comp insurance, and I probably told folks that I support the bill when they came to ask me about it, but I am uncomfortable with this for some of the same reasons. I think generally it's bad budgeting for us to pass a bill but not have the gumption to come up with the money at the time we pass it, so we just make it effective next biennium. I really don't like that as a policy, so I just I don't know if we can
I would say
a little further, but yeah. I just want to express that concern.
I fully appreciate that, and that's why I am now opening a work session on Senate Bill 669.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 669 authorizes a licensed naturopathic doctor to serve as an attending physician in workers' compensation claims. We heard this one on March 29th, and there is no amendment, no revenue impact, and no fiscal impact.
So, if there's any motions on this bill.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
We last time we heard this bill, MWAC was going to take up this issue in their next meeting. I would like to get the report from MWAC.
What I heard is that it wasn't on this bill. It was another bill that we had before us, that there was a discussion that there was going to be a meeting, I believe, this coming Monday of MLAC, and they were looking at potentially not only this practice but other practices as to what they may want to do in the future, and also these separate bills. So,
There was one bill last that we did earlier that I thought Mr. Schultz testified to, that MLAC was actually going to support a bill to study chiropractors, nurse practitioners, naturopaths,
podiatrists,
etc., veterinarians,
lawyers. They're all in there. Do we want to call someone up for?
I would appreciate that if we could have an MLAC representative, or at least two in the room. or an administrator and a representative to be assessed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm John Schultz, administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division. Senate Bill 669 was heard by MLAC on Monday. They did not vote to recommend support of this bill. In reference to the discussion in regard to House Bill 2588, which was the chiropractic study, there was discussion that was brought up at the MLAC meeting to expand that study to include the other provider types, including the naturopathic physicians, podiatrists, physicians assistants, and chiropractors as well. At this time, they have not taken a final action or made a final recommendation on that concept.
So they actually did meet this past previous Monday meeting, 3 days ago, not coming this coming Monday, as I thought they. Maybe it testified. So they just met this last Monday?
Mr. Chair, yes. They met on Monday, I believe that was the 4th.
Mm-hmm.
And they took this bill up as well as the other provider bills, and they did not make a recommendation as a committee to support it. No, they did not recommend support of the bill.
Well, I'm going to just put it on the record. After hearing the testimony on the naturopaths, to me, these are individuals that are, in fact, providing what I call attending physician services. They're the primary care provider for individuals who have chosen to go to these doctors. These individuals have a lot of training. What I also heard was that what the naturopaths have to do now when they have a existing relationship with the patient who may have been injured at work, they have to actually farm that person out to another doctor who meets the definition of attending physician. And it seems to me like it's one heck of a cost for the system to require the attending physician of these individuals to refer them to another physician to become the attending physician to make a determination and then come back. That's why I've brought this one forward. It just seems to me that if any of all of the bills that we've had brought before us that had people that would be eligible to be classified as an attending physician in a possible workers' comp claim, that the naturopaths were the ones that best made the argument based on their continued relationship that they have already established with these patients that may find themselves in that position. So I guess the chair, for one, finds himself pretty frustrated at this point that we basically are trying to save money in the system and trying to make it easy for people to be able to get coverage. But what we're saying is that these individuals, because they've chosen to have a medical provider who is licensed in this state to provide what I call general services, can't get there without going to another doctor to get in included. And what I'm hearing is that this is not going to be taken up during this session. Is that correct?
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I probably left a little soon there. Again, John Schultz, Administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division. The position that the committee has taken on the other providers, the non-MDs, non-DOs, and and I'm not sure I pronounced this correctly, maxillofacial surgeons, who all qualify as attending physicians, is that on the four different bills that were before them to expand the role of these providers, they voted to not make a recommendation of support for those bills. They did discuss expanding the study bill, which is HB 2588.
I know I heard that, and I think everyone else heard
okay.
that. My question basically is, what I'm hearing is that this decision is not going to be made during this session, that they're going to put this off into some study sometime in the future.
Mr. Chair, that would be correct.
All right, the chair.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Can I ask a question? Why are maxillofacial surgeons included and general practitioner like a naturopath not included?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, this goes back before my time as administrator, but my understanding is that at that time, the person who was in my position, the administrator of the Workers' Compensation Division, at the time that this was being decided, was actually in a car accident where a pipe had come off a truck in front of them, came through the windshield, hit that individual in the jaw, broke his jaw, and that surgeon became...
So, stop. Thank you very much. So, thank you very much for your testimony. The chair is more than willing to take a motion on 669.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I would move Senate Bill 669 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Burdick moves Senate Bill 669 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I've been firmly in that process.
I understand. Any other discussion? Karen, if you'd be so kind to call the roll.
No.
No.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye. Senate Bill 669 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I will carry the bill. And I'm going to just throw on the record again. I mean, based on what we just heard, just preposterous that we have somebody, because they're in the process of needing medical services, that they basically allowed a group of doctors to become attending physicians because of their needs, when we have a bunch of people in this state that are actually using naturopaths as their attending physicians, and instead of having them as being part of this panel, they basically have to go out and find another doctor to give them that reference. And so that's why the bill is going to be moving forward. Is there any other business for the Commerce Committee?
I'd like to remind everyone about our travel meeting next week to Eugene, and we've called your offices to find out if you need to reserve a car. So.
Right. And I want to thank everyone that's been working on this and everyone that's associated with MLAC. I appreciate your participation as well. And I think I'll put on the record my position on this and why I wanted to move it forward. Thank you very much, and we'll close the committee for today.
Senator Presenza, you promised we'd be late.